You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM in Fairfield, Iowa, or KRUUFM.com if you're listening online. Grassroots, community-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting live from the Cultural District here in the lovely town of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
And good afternoon, everyone. Another beautiful day in Iowa. A little warmer, but still awfully nice.
I know. We've had really an incredible summer this year.
Oh, we have.
Yeah.
We still got some to go.
And the sun shining on, if you're listening to us on Friday, I get a reminder from one of my favorite listeners occasionally that I need to remember that not everybody's listening to this on Friday. So if we're talking about the weather, it means nothing to them.
Right. Right.
So if you're listening to this on Monday morning, you missed your beautiful Friday. That is true. Today is
It was 58 degrees or something the other day. This has been the mildest summer ever.
So our guest today
is
Mr. Steve Rudy Wilson, who has, I think this is at least your third time on Writers' Voices over the almost 7 years that we've been doing this show.
Yeah.
So welcome back to Writers' Voices, Rudy.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you called me, and it's fun to talk to you. Yeah. You're very knowledgeable, and we were friends for a long time.
Yep.
You know, we're like kind of Fairfield career people.
Yeah, we've been here
forever. I've been here several months.
You've been here several months time around, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Monica was, she came here in junior high.
Wow.
Yeah, 1972.
Yeah.
That's when we moved here. So I guess that dates me, doesn't it?
I guess it does.
Anybody was wondering how old I am, you can figure it out from there. So, now, if anyone's listening today and was expecting to hear John Kramer, whom we had announced as our guest today, we had a little bit of a miscommunication. John will be on with us later, probably later this month. If not, it'll definitely be in September. To talk about book marketing. He is also a former Fairfielder. He's not living here now, but he was here for a long time, and he is the expert on online and offline marketing for independent authors. So we look forward to that conversation in the future. But first, today we have the great pleasure of talking with one of Fairfield's, maybe in a sense, best known writers. He's shaking his head, but you know there aren't too many writers here in Fairfield who were published by Gordon Lish, who was the famous editor at
Alfred Knopf.
Yeah, at Alfred Knopf.
I don't know how to pronounce that. Knopf, Knopf.
Yeah, K N O P F.
Boy, that was a stroke of luck. It was just like from 84 to 94. It's almost like my stars were all out. I remember once Seymour was talking to Buddy in a Salinger story, and he goes, when you were writing, were your stars all out or something like that, you know? But it was just like miraculous. Everything I wrote went gold. I couldn't believe it. And then, bam, 94, that was pretty much the end. Like, wow, you're over.
Wow.
And then there's been things since then, but those 10 years were good. And Gordon Lish, to get that in his hands.
Wow.
And it was great. And he said he took it to France for a month. And he goes, trust me, it was a difficult edit. And he cut it from 440 pages, well, typed, which might be, I don't know what, in a book, 350, down to, it's really pretty short novel, 178.
Wow.
But he didn't write anything, which I'm glad of. And he told me, I didn't like what he did. I was very depressed for a while. I said, I just can't live with what you did. He says, all right, fine, fix it. Do what you want, and I'll accept it. And I did what I wanted, and I chose the title. And I remember him writing me, and he goes, oh, Rudy, he always said this, excellent Rudy, excellent title. Because, we had a few we were going to name it. It was
the title ended up being?
The Red Truck.
Yeah.
Which I've ridden the wheels off. I got to move on. I got another book that's been out for a while with, I would say, I don't want to insult anyone, but maybe one of the worst publishers that there is. And she's actually even personally angry at me all the time. Because I kind of pushed her a little bit. So let's do something. Let's market. Let's get reviews. Let's move it, you know. And she was, she's a one-person publisher, I think. She has a few people with her. Good cover. It's called Ravenna. Not Ravenna, that's the devil. Ravenna Press in Spokane. And they published another book called Sonia's Blue, which is a collection of short fiction. Most of them published, some of them not. And then some other shorter things here and there.
Well, one of the things about marketing books today is that, and this is a difference between when did The Red Truck come out?
Oh, originally, 87.
87. Yeah. So one of the things that's changed is that the publishing companies don't really market for writers anymore. Even, certainly not small publishing companies.
No. I thought that was one of the main things they did.
I would be happy to help, too. I sent out hundreds and hundreds of emails to independent bookstores when I had, I guess it was Sonia's Blue came out or something. I didn't get many. I didn't sell many, you know. I got a check once for $2.87 royalties.
Now, is The Red Truck still in print?
Still in print.
And so do you still get royalties on that?
I got a check the other day for $48.
Wow.
And I think 12 people had...
Had bought it.
You know, but it's in libraries, and I'm glad there's a band in L.A. called The Red Truck, because they liked it.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's kind of got a weird cult following, and it's still out there a little bit.
Now, at one point, there was some talk about a movie.
Oh, boy. We got 3-4 hours. you know, Richard Beamer and I had been really basically, you know, I love him. He is such a generous soul, always kind to me. And he's been doing a lot of, he did the David Lynch thing in India, so we've taken a lot of breaks. It's been like a few years, but we've been working on a project for 17 years. And it's a movie called Rudy, which is kind of, you know, sounds very presumptuous, but it's really about, I shot about 30 hours of it, and he shot about 50.
Wow.
It's basically our lives about two guys who wanted to make a movie of The Red Truck but couldn't.
Mm.
And so it sounds silly, but it's kind of covers their lives over many, many years. We have all this footage of so many years, and he is a master editor. I mean, the way he puts things together are just amazing, you know. And he makes it work. And he's shooting a few scenes as if he was going to do the movie. He's shooting 4 or 5 different scenes, and he's invested a lot.
So it's still going.
It's
going
to happen.
Wow.
Oh, he'll do it. He's, and I'm pushing him a bit, you know. But he's slow because he is so meticulous.
Mm.
You know, we'd be driving to Walmart at like 11 miles an hour. I go, hey, man, let's go. And he goes, oh, Rudy, Rudy. He always says that to me, Rudy, Rudy, you know, be patient. He said, well, I want to get there, whatever. But he's a wonderful man, and I think it'll be a really fascinating film. It'll be out one day.
Yeah.
So
it's a documentary style?
It's documentary style with... Now he's adding some non-fiction, you know, like cinema, from scenes that would have been in the entire movie. So he's shooting like 3 or 4 actual scenes.
Yeah.
Rachel Wendell was in one of them, and he's gotten some people from Iowa City. And so he's shooting a few scenes that would have been in the movie if we had done it. And those will be like, you know, cinematic.
And what, you know, so there was at one point an intention to make a movie of The Red Truck.
Yes, we wrote script after script, and in L.A., and I'll never forget one night about 3 a.m, he was on the floor just with happiness. He fell to the floor at 3 a.m., and he goes, we've got it. He said, this is better. This is as good as Fellini. We've got it. You know, and that was like 7 more scripts to go. And, So I think we have a script finally, and I don't know. I don't think we'll ever shoot the real movie. No, it's just too much.
Because
we did do some. Oh, the whole thing.
Much?
You know, we went out and shot a Civil War reenactment because there's a chapter on the Civil War, and we got into we were up in trees shooting, both of us, because we wanted to get out of their way, and it was it just didn't look real. You had these Civil War guys like wearing Nikes and stuff, and so it was sort of like, it didn't really work. And we got some good shots though that we edited out of it, of like horses, mm-hmm. you know, just a close up of a side of a horse or the sound of it, and you know, like I said, he edited that in a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's coming along.
Oh, this it actually sounds pretty fascinating.
Well, if I know Richard, it'll be a really fine, interesting film. Yeah.
You were in another film of his some years ago. I'm trying to remember what it was.
And
saw he did a film of I know he did one of the big festival in India.
But I remember but he then, showed it. Yeah, downtown.
Yeah,
and I came there. What was that?
Yeah,
what?
And then there was one that was about Fairfield, I think, or about characters in Fairfield or something.
Yeah, and
maybe you were in the one about the Indian thing, talking about enlightenment and
that
something.
Was it, something like that.
Yeah,
and it's hard to remember. It's been a while. Wow,
yeah.
It's been like 10 years ago or something.
At least, maybe more.
Yeah, so it's hard to remember. But I remember being there, and he left the room. He's a very reclusive and kind of. I think he's kind of shy. I think he's got inferiority and a bit of superiority. In a good way, though.
And you kind of hope he's not listening to this.
So. No, I love him. He knows I love him. Superiority only in the way that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry. He has said a few things that he wished his career. He didn't feel he really did what he really wanted to do. But
well,
he did some major films.
Yeah, he was in West Side Story. And
yeah,
of course,
I mean, yeah,
he
the
been
lead
known,
of West Side Story.
And
Diary of Anne Frank, The Longest Day, where he was, I think it ranks, and my brother and I had this elaborate ranking system, which would take forever, but it's funny. But he is ranked, if for nothing else, he had a dialogue with Richard Burton in The Longest Day for like, you know, 5 minutes.
Wow.
And not only that, but Anne Frank
so that ranks him, that
well,
gives
that,
him high
that
ranking.
Alone ranks him, but yeah. West Side, the lead of West Side Story, he's forever ranked.
Yeah.
I
now,
mean, you know.
Do you think he has a similar feeling like you were just talking about, where there was like a time in his career where everything was golden and then
I
and
think
then
he did
sort of
actually, and he was on the Andy Kaufman, some show, the Andy Kaufman. And sadly, it was called a show of has-beens.
Oh.
But it was a comedy.
Oh.
And he had Richard was his buddy.
Okay.
And he came on, and Richard kind of played that, you know, he played it. Like, yeah, I'm has-been, and I haven't made a movie in 17 years. He did have a 17-year gap. But he shot 23 films. He's
wow.
a major filmmaker. So he shot 23 Hollywood films.
Wow.
I don't even know which ones they were. And you know the great thing, real quick, about Richard, it's just a karmic thing about him. When he was like 10, 11 years old, he was in Italy for some reason, and or a little bit older maybe, he eventually was the person who brought Sharon Tate to America as his girlfriend and introduced her to some Roman Polanski, who married her, and then it didn't go so well for them.
Uh-huh.
But he was in a line of about 200 or 300 boys, and Victoria De Sica, who did The Bicycle Thief and is a master, went down the line and stopped at him and pointed, and he said, "I want you." And it was a movie with Jennifer Jones, Montgomery Clift.
Oh, my God.
It's something, what's the name of it? Something like The Dreams of American Wife or something. I'm sorry I don't have the title, Richard. But it was, I mean, that was it. And he was young, and he started out his career then at, like a young boy. It was a good movie. And but like I said, later he hooked up with Sharon Tate, brought her to America. I never, ever have mentioned that to him. But I guess now I am. And I know it's a heartbreak for him, so I don't want to dwell on it, you know, but yeah. It wasn't his fault.
Right.
He had nothing to do with it, but, you know.
So, wow. Well, you know, talking, it's interesting because, you know, here's this person who's been living in Fairfield for many, many years, and I think a lot of people are kind of aware that he's here, but I had no idea that he had that much success in filmmaking.
Yeah, he's a great filmmaker, shot all those films in Hollywood, and he's gone on to do other films. He's done some great, he did a wonderful independent film with some people, and it hasn't been released yet for some reason. It's been years, but it was a really, he said his best thing he ever did.
Wow. Well, that doesn't really sound like much of a has-been.
No, he's no has-been. He is never, he is busy every minute of the day.
Wow. You know. Well, you know, this is maybe a good time to segue. We're talking about films. You had another film you wanted to mention. You told me that you wanted to mention Deja's film.
Oh, yes. Wow. Well, you know, we got to bring Deja Bernhardt up because she's a child of Fairfield, born and raised, and lives in Austin. She's in a very special program in Austin that only accepts 12 people a year. She won, I think I mentioned it already, she won an Academy Award for new filmmakers. So she's up and coming.
She did?
Yeah, in L.A. It's a big thing.
Like an Oscar?
It's like an Oscar for new filmmakers.
Okay.
Young or whatever. It's not the real Oscars, but it's serious. It's a major award. And she came here, and the name of her film is Returning to Ananda. And it was so much fun to see her here in town. She's a great director. I couldn't believe it. I mean, she really was powerful. She's no kid anymore. She's like, whatever, 30 or something, you know, or whatever. And she, you know, had the boom mics, and they had serious cameras. I mean, it was very serious. And it's about a girl who comes back to a small town to kind of try to return home. You know, you can you come home again, kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
And it was the pilot. And she shot the whole thing here, and she gave me a little one-minute part just for fun. And it was such a joy to watch her run the whole thing.
And what were you playing?
I was just a...
Was it scripted or unscripted?
It was unscripted. She goes, Rudy, I want to stick you in this. So I was sitting on a bench, and as she walked by, we looked at each other as if we were real close or had been. And she was with her new boyfriend. That's part of the movie, some guy. And we did high fives and a sweet thing. And I supposed to turn and look at the guy with a dirty look. And I don't know. I didn't do it that well, I don't think. But she said, yeah, you did it all right. We did two takes, and that was it. She goes, yeah, it was dirty enough. And so it was good to have her that she did that.
Now, was the rest of the pilot scripted?
Yes, I think it was, and she shot it all here. And if it makes it for like HBO or somewhere, she's trying to market it. Mm-hmm. She'll be back and shoot like, you know, many, like 10, 12, 13 more episodes, and they'll all be shot here. So it really could be a big deal. Yeah.
Now, were most of the actors from? Did she bring them?
She brought some serious actors from Austin, from her program.
Yeah.
And she used some locals, of course, and filled it in. And it was really fun. It was just a lot of fun to watch see her.
And when was that?
And her power. That was this summer, like June or something. Yeah.
All right. So you'll keep us informed.
Oh, you'll find
progress.
Out. If she comes to town to shoot a feature film, it'll be all over the
news. Or it's a TV series?
TV series, that's it. More for, she's trying to get on HBO, episodic thing.
Yeah.
And but you never know what'll happen to it.
Now, what's, you know, the concept of going home, back to a small town? Is there more to it than that? Is there something, you know, what's the real...
Well, that's a good question.
What's the conflict? Is she running away from something?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know. She's probably running away from possibly a life that she has had, and a difficult life in the big city, of some abuse and some problems and just the hassles. And so she was a girl who thought, you know, I want to go home, and I want to see if I can make it in a small town and be happy and all that. And settle down here. And so she tries it, and I'm sure there's got to be a lot more to it, you know. Yeah. And they're going to have to show the past and the, even her childhood, maybe. And
now, is her in the show? Is her family still here? Her parents? Her
father is in Texas. Ed Bernhardt.
No, in the show, not in real life, but
in the show. I don't know. I don't remember. I don't think her parents are really featured particularly.
Okay.
I'll find out. Yeah. You know, she didn't really clue me into the whole thing.
Yeah, interesting.
She was busy as heck and couldn't spend much time, and it was wonderful to see her, though.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Rudy Wilson, who actually was our last-minute savior today, as when our pre-scheduled guest fell through at the last minute, and I called Rudy, and he said, yeah, I'll come. So thank you once again for saving us today.
Well, definitely, and I wanted to mention a friend of mine. Her name is Julie. Maybe I shouldn't say her last name. I don't know. You know, she lives in Vermont, and it's quite a story. We were extremely close when we went to the University of Kansas in the early 70s. You know, we had kind of a relationship for a few months, and then that was sort of it. It was never a bad breakup or anything negative, and I just sort of drifted on and did my life and the movement and on and came here. 40 years later, she contacted me. And I think it was because she heard one of the Writer's Voice podcasts.
Seriously?
Yes, absolutely. And she contacted me, goes, do you remember me? And I went, at first I was a little like startled, and I go, well, yes. And we have been in a wonderful, intimate friendship. I mean, she's married and lives in Vermont, and she's great, and a really kind of a wonderful friendship. And she reminded me of something that I think is kind of funny that I had forgotten about, that a friend of mine, I sent him a copy of The Red Truck, and his sister read it and had seizures over reading the book. Now, I think that's a little extreme. I mean, perhaps she was not that stable to begin with, but
blame your book.
It could be a selling point. You know, some people have seizures when they read the book. I think a lot of people would be running down the street to read it.
Well, yeah, because you know, it has that much impact.
You might get the fringe audience.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I mean, I thought it was just funny. You know, someone, wow, had a seizure reading the book. I'm sorry. I don't think it was that harsh. That was kind of a love story, really.
A very violent love story.
It had violence. Yeah. It did.
Yeah.
We won't have to dwell on that. There's new things, money, new things.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've had quite an interesting career.
Well, it's been fortunate. And it has been interesting. I've written like 9 novels, but only published 3.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 that I like quite a bit. And I'm still sending some of the other ones out. And I have a new book called, we've been over this, Exit Angel.
Yeah, I think that the last time you were on,
it's a pretty intense novel, and I meant it to be. It's way off from what I usually write. It's not language, literary oriented. Which was what I learned at the workshop, and I, you know, very languagey. And I love language so much. And so generally I try to play with language and make it poetic and stuff like that. But this one is not really, it's got that to it, of course. I can't help it. But it's a harsh, hard movie. Girl with a Gun, I could call it. It's incest, revenge, murder. And it does not hold back. And the ending has some really interesting twists that I will not reveal. And quite intense, painful, lovely, wonderful love story filled with all manner of things. And I'm trying to polish it up before I send it out again.
Well, it sounds like the world to me.
It's kind of the real world, you know. Like
that's
there's
right.
real problems out there, and she's in them, and she doesn't take no for answer. She carries a gun, and she means business. And I love her, and it'll be interesting.
Now, was this you talked one time about one of the characters from? I'm not sure if it was one of your novels. I think it is the novel Shiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was she the one who came, like, you're sitting on a bench, and she just sort of appeared to you, and she stayed with you? Was this character in this new book like that, too?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. The Shiny thing was really an amazing phenomenon. It really did happen. But that's my favorite book, and it has not been published. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big... If I could get Shiny out there with a real publisher, I could die happy. You know, because I think it's the best thing I've ever written, and I love it, but I've published pieces of it. 12 or 13 pages were in a literary magazine, and so a little bit's been out there, and that's something.
What do you think has kept that one from getting picked up?
I have a friend in town who says the beginning of that book is so amazing and riveting. It's like a prologue. He said if you could have kept that voice through the whole novel, it would have won like a Pulitzer. It would have been the best. Pulitzer, whatever you call it. And I didn't. I shifted voices to the girl's brother. And it's a little bit not as lovely, not as good. And I know that. And I just don't have what it takes to go back and rewrite every line. I just don't want to.
Yeah.
I kind of like it as it is. And
But even if that could make it a huge success?
Well, if. There's a big if. It's a big if. Because I want to try to fix Exit Angel. And I look at Shiny sometimes and think, oh, I could do it. I could do it, I guess. You know, I'm 87 now, and I don't know if I have much time left.
Well, no way.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay, how about self-publishing?
I'm old school. And I know it's the new way. It is. You know, the internet, of course. You don't have to say how powerful that is. We know that. But I've got a thing about e-books and self-publishing. Like I said, old school. I want a publisher to like me enough to pay me and publish. And I just do. They don't have to pay me much, anything. But just to acknowledge and do help me with the marketing.
Yeah.
But I might, e-books are the thing, so I could easily go that way.
Yeah.
But then, you know, marketing's everything, with everything you have. If you've got the greatest book, and I've got some stuff out there that nobody knows about, and it takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
I've contacted people that would do it, but they charge like $3,000 or $4,000 just to get off the ground, and... So marketing is everything.
Yeah.
With every product.
The publisher that you had didn't do anything with the marketing, though.
No, she would. That's why I was upset with her, and why she is not really quite friendly with me. And I'm trying to get a new publisher, so I'm sending them out to other publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one in mind, a new agency, and they're reading the books right now. They've had them for a couple months, and they're going to get back to me. So if they take it on, it'd be very good.
Now, do you go through an agent, or you go direct to the publisher?
I try to go through my agent, New York lawyer, woman, New York City, and God bless her. She, I think, you know, lunch costs like $100 in New York. And the red truck, she only made made $600, I think. And that was good, but she always has the same, it's like a form letter, but verbally. Yeah. So, Rudy, you know, I love it. I love it. I love what you've written, but I just can't do it. And she says, I can't get behind it.
Yeah.
But I think she's really saying is, I'm not going to make a dime.
Right.
And I have to earn a living in New York, and I haven't talked to her lately, but Exit Angel kind of blew her mind, and Rodney Charles read it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I love it. I really like your writing. Your style is fine. But, wow, it wore me down. I really like it, but I can't do it. And he currently has Shiny.
Does he?
Yeah, and I think it's much softer. He might go for that.
Well, yeah. Actually, that's a good time for us to make this announcement. You talk about Rodney, who's been on our show a couple times. He has First World Publishing here in Fairfield. Mm-hmm. And we're teaming up with First World Publishing. Writers Voices is teaming up with First World Publishing to offer the Ink Fingers, which with a Z, writing contest.
Mm. Excellent.
Open to all writers in Jefferson County, Iowa, and our neighboring counties in southeast Iowa. So any county that touches Jefferson County, if you live in one of those counties, you're eligible for this contest. And here's how it works. It's open to all genres, book-length projects only. You submit a one-page query letter and 6 to 10 manuscript pages by September 30th, 2013. Submissions will be via email, Facebook, or regular mail, and more details, we'll get the details of how to submit, tell you over the next few weeks. It will also be on our writersvoices.com website and the KRUUFM.com website and First World Publishing's website. All contestants will receive a free ebook from First World Publishing, Book Marketing Basics, or Publish It Now. Then, Rodney and myself and Caroline will select the top six entries, and in mid to late October, Writers' Voices will host our six top contestants to read their entries aloud on the air.
Oh.
The submissions will also be published on the Ink Fingers and Writers' Voices Facebook and web pages. Then listeners and readers vote for their favorite entry by liking on Facebook. And the entry that gets the most likes wins the grand prize, which is a full publishing package from First World Publishing, mm-hmm. including three editions of your book, hardcover, softcover, and ebook, a one-hour interview on Writers' Voices, and a book reading signing at a local venue that we will set up.
Wow, I'm going to have to write that down before I leave. But I am just already willing to accept that award now.
And the first runner-up receives a free manuscript critique from the editors at First
World Publishing. No trip to the Caribbean or anything?
No, nothing in there.
A little trip to Tumwa or something?
And then all publishing profits from the winning manuscript will be donated to KRUU.
It's great. It's a great project. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah,
very
so
good.
We're really excited about that, and this is the first public announcement. We'll put the details in the Weekly Reader. We'll put
good,
the details
we'll
in the Fairfield Ledger
and
really all the local papers and the Iowa Source. So we'll get the word out. Depending on how soon we get the word out, there might be a little. We might change the deadlines a little bit.
Yeah,
we might extend
that. Yeah, we might have to do that. Extend that a little bit.
Yeah, but. Yeah, so that's, Rodney
it's exciting,
really, he really wants to promote local writers.
And yeah, I know he does. He's very serious about it, and he's good. He knows what he's doing.
He does. He does.
Yeah,
and you know, his own story is really quite amazing, how he got into the publishing business. You can listen to one of our podcasts on writersvoices.com or KRUUFM.com and hear the whole story. He basically had written a book that he thought everybody would want and couldn't get a publisher interested, and decided to publish it himself and launched a publishing company from that. And that book's been very successful. But Rudy, I understand your hesitation about self-publishing, because the downside to the self, kind of the revolution in self-publishing is that there are so many books being published now that it's very difficult to get attention for yours.
And I would like to say, I think it's kind of lowered the standards.
Exactly.
I mean, anybody could write a book about, like, a 300-page novel about a chair. Now, if it's great, then great. That's a good book. But if it's horrible, they can still get it out there. And so we're just inundated with all these books.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they shouldn't have a voice. Everybody should have a voice.
The great thing about self-publishing on the internet and print on demand is everybody can get published.
It's
the bad thing is everybody can get published.
Exactly. I mean, in the old days, you had like Henry Miller, Hemingway, Faulkner, like five guys in the 30s and 40s or so. You know, and there were more, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's just like,
well, even
so many
kind of what you call mainstream publishers traditional publishers, maybe is the better word, because they vary from the, you know, Penguin Books and Alfred Knopf and those guys down to the very small Ravenna Press,
yeah,
or
Iowa Review. You know, a lot, yeah, of Iowa have Review has a book press.
Ice Cube Books. You know, there's a wide range, but even just among those, they're publishing. They publish tens of thousands of books a year.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
And it's getting it out there is a thing, but I'm...
Getting the distribution.
And the authors, they join in. There's marketing. There's things you can do. You can get it out there.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, with the net, you're going to reach thousands in 5 minutes.
Yeah. But the quality is still, when I pick up a book, first of all, when I pick up a book that's been self-published, I can almost always tell by the look and feel of the book. Unless they've done the smart thing and hired George Foster to design their cover.
Well, he's good.
He's good.
Great.
Yep.
Well, the first sentence will tell an awful lot. It really does.
But the typeface tells a lot, too. The color of the paper. There's all these
The
little,
feel of the paper, the everything, the quality.
Yes, yeah. There's all these little details that, do you notice that, Mom, when you're...
Yeah, well... You know, there's such a variety of, like you say, paper qualities.
Yeah.
And the cover, it doesn't catch your eye.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, if it looks weak,
Right. Or, if it looks homemade. But then even one that's done professionally, that they've hired a cover designer and they've hired somebody to lay it out and so forth... Sometimes it's not that the writing isn't good, it's that they have bypassed the real editing stage. The thing that Gordon Lish did for you.
Oh, yeah, like real editors.
Real editors.
And these days I noticed that it's so important. In the old days, Dostoevsky or whoever, all these, the old writers, and American writers as well, Theodore Dreiser, I don't know who to think of right now.
Tolstoy.
But they would take, their time.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be, pages even of, the weather. But now it's like writers right off the bat have to have a snappy first sentence. And it's just maybe because of our short attention span. Not many readers will deal with a new book that has two pages that are about the weather or slow, unless they're masters, I remember Salinger said something once, if you can write a story about a pair of shoes or something and make it fantastic, make it art, then you're a writer. Because if you can make it riveting, it's not about the topic, it's the language, the way you present it and all that. So it's always still about quality.
Right.
As many e-books as you want. You pick it up, you don't like it, you won't buy it. So it's quality still is out
there.
Well,
speaking of editing, I edited a book a friend of mine wrote, and several people had already read it. And I read it, I edited it from a English teacher standpoint.
There's that, yeah.
So there were quite a
few. You were an English teacher?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
So there,
me too. Yeah.
So there were quite a few things that I caught that they didn't.
Yes.
Because I was looking at it from that.
Well, punctuation. I used to make a joke with my class, and I don't mean to sound at all graphic, but I had a little bit of a loose, not scripted lecture. I used to teach at Indian Hills. The punctuation is more fun than sex. And that got their attention.
Yes, I'm sure
it really did. Yes, they're sleeping in the back, and they go, "What? What you talking about?" I said, "Well, imagine the semicolon. Just imagine what that could mean in a relationship. I mean, you're like your lovers, or you're together, and then there's a pause, but knowing there's more to come, or there's so many. The ellipse can mean so much, and God, the parenthetical aside. Think what you could do in a parentheses. So I just went on with it, and they enjoyed that, and I liked it. It was funny. And
how long did you teach at this school?
Until they fired me. When they came in and heard that lecture, that was it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, I finally did leave for a romance back east. I just had had enough, and I had a new director who was kind of tough. The head of the program, the original one, just hired me on the spot. He liked me personally. His name was Dana, someone I can't forget, but his last name. But it kind of changed, and I was kind of ready to move on, and I headed east for a wonderful romance that was wild and crazy, and I wrote a book about it, and I've tried to sell it, but nobody has picked it up yet.
How many of your books are based on your life?
Well, I would probably say all of them, and maybe most authors. It's impossible, almost. Exit Angel. It's not, I don't think it's about my life at all.
Okay, and Shiny, is it about your life?
Well, only in the way that I loved her so much, and I could relate to the brother's feeling towards her. And I think I threw in different characters here and there that I felt were part of me. But no, it really wasn't. And the red truck, it was, I think.
Well, now, Exit Angel, the version of it that I saw, which at that point was called
Girl Walking Backwards.
Walking Backwards. There were flashbacks in that of the man going with his mother, taking care of his mother. She was... and she was ill and so forth. And I definitely got the feeling that was from your life.
Well, that's a big topic. we need to call my shrink, who is a wonderful man, Dr. Pomfrey. I just want to like to plug him because he's such a kind and good man. Uh-huh. He helps everybody. And he works all the time, too much, to help so many people. But, my mother... It was about her to some degree. The mother in Shiny commits suicide. And my mother, this is kind of harsh, but she attempted serious suicide attempts when I lived with her as a boy, me and her alone, and was a severe alcoholic. And it was really no picnic. I grew up pretty fast. Ambulances, and sometimes I was alone, like 2-3 days. I wouldn't know where she was.
Wow.
And I wouldn't go to school, and I was, pretty young. At that point, I was already, 13, 14. I grew up pretty quick with that. But she did pull it together very well and went on. Always a very successful woman, and... had a great life as an AA for 30 years and did well,
As an AA? What's...
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh,
She got it together and went and did it.
Wow.
And was in the Laguna Beach with the guy named Clancy, who is the most well-known AA sponsor. He really is. You ask any AA person, you ever heard of Clancy? And they go, oh, yeah, Clancy's the man. Yeah, he's a big wheel. And she was in the Southern California, Orange County, whatever area group, and it was a big deal,
wow.
And blah, blah, blah,
That
it's really off topic, I guess.
That organization has probably saved more lives than
maybe millions, actually, literally, and the families. And so many people are touched by it. It's a very difficult... They say it's harder to quit than heroin.
Yeah. Now, you have a brother...
I do.
Where was he during this time?
He
was he older? And
saw
gone?
What was coming and hit the road. He'd been in a terrible, terrible car crash where he didn't have many friends.
I think
friends.
That's in Exit Angel, too. The brother almost dies.
I think it might be,
yeah.
My brother was kind of a quiet type, bookworm a bit. Wonderful. I loved him so much. I still do. He's my favorite person, really. And he was in a terrible accident. Three boys were killed and all that. And it was just too much. They were his only friends. And it broke his heart. And I knew, he saw, though, what was coming with Mom. And he just hit the road and moved to San Francisco in, 66. The good years, It was really weird, I got to say it, though. I mean, here he was in this terrible car accident, and they never knew if his brain was injured or not. They never really said it, but he was in a coma for like 2 months.
Whoa.
And the minute he got to San Francisco, he took acid. He probably took it 300 times. So, you know, we're talking about an unusual fellow. He wouldn't do it now for anything. He's almost what I'd call a fundamentalist Catholic. He's just so in love with his church and Hilo, Hawaii, and he's doing quite well. So.
Well, good. Good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
All right.
But, yeah, he wasn't driving in the accident.
No, thank God. I couldn't imagine living with that.
Yeah.
He couldn't, I don't think he could handle it. He has guilt enough that he survived, survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
Oh. But to drive, and thank God that he wasn't. You know, and the details are horrific, you know.
So these little kind of bits of history make their way into your books, but in disguised, not you know, it's not like, have you ever actually thought about writing a memoir?
Yes. Yes. And maybe I even have. I have some things. I have something that's kind of a memoir, but it's been tucked away so long. And one thing real quick about that accident I've always wanted to write about, because I think it is just amazing. My dad, and this was right before he kind of left the family, which I don't blame him. He saw my mother where she was headed to. But he had to... Oh, it was unbelievable. I'll never forget it. I drove up on my little moped up to the house, and I saw the police at the door. And my father's reaction was horrific to whatever they were saying, and it scared me. And they said that my brother was dead, because they were in bathing suits, they were teenagers, their wallets were all over the highway, and they were mistaken. And he had to drive an hour with the police to the first funeral home. And they got you got to identify the body, and it wasn't him. Imagine that. And then he goes, okay, well, we have two more bodies. And he had to go to three funeral homes, and none of them were him. And he finally was like out. He said, well, where is my son? He said, well, we do have a boy at the KU Med Center who's next to death. And my dad went there, the police took him, and he was just laying on a cot in a coma, dying. And he made a ruckus and got a doctor, and he was, did all that. And I always wanted to write about that. I thought that would be a pretty intense story about what he went through. And I think it was kind of the end of the marriage and everything else. And it was right around when the Beatles came out and JFK, and everything blew up then. We all went our own way, you know. It was a wild time.
But you were just a boy.
I was just a boy, I guess.
Just a boy. Yeah. Well, Rudy, you've, like Mom says, you've had a really interesting career, and you had a recent little success, and I mean maybe big in some
nice
ways,
one.
But let's talk about that.
Well, it's amazing, really. There was a friend of mine on Facebook, which is the new, you know, people that you say, they don't even say, I want to get online. They go, I want to get on Facebook, you know. But her name is Dawn Raphael, and we talked once in a while. I didn't know she was a publisher. And she read something I wrote, a very short thing, 300 words. I put it somehow. She read it. I sent it somewhere. I sent it to a magazine, and she was the editor of it. It's called The Literarian in New York. And I don't know a lot about it. There's not a lot about it online. I've heard that it's big. Some people say it isn't. And so she said, you know, I really love what you wrote, and would you accept $100 for it? And I thought, well, you better believe it. You know, $100 for 300 words, I'm ready to go. You know, having only made, $40 on two novels, I was shocked. And I guess something about it touched her. I don't know. I just sat down and scribbled it out one day and sent it out.
Well, why don't you read it for us?
I will. I hope my voice is holding up. Yes, it's, the name of it is Blue. But now I felt dirty. I was never the same after those nights and the leaving. I grew old. I became a very old man. I lost the ability to laugh. And I didn't cry either. I survived. But that song I just heard softened me, teared me up, and I noticed some small blue, perhaps robin's eggs, broken on the edge of the sidewalk. Dead little baby birds, I assumed. I looked at those blues for a time. Then I remembered my father. He was a good, kind man. I wanted to live, and I knew the only way to live was to be present, present now. And I'd been so lost in regret and future fear, I realized that I was not living at all. I stopped and stooped down by the broken eggs. It was just us then. I thought of an old man singing a song, his song, holding on to what had been an entire life, with a childhood so long ago, and all the small details, friends and fights and dust and dirt and parents and schools and aging and manhood and maybe a wife, maybe a divorce or two, and then old age, and then in bed or struck down walking on a dark sidewalk, a heart betrayal, a loss, a moving on into the real darkness. Then I saw a girl through a lit window with the shade up, her back and long hair, ponytail down to her bare back, down her bare back. I watched and stood in the dark. Then she moved away slightly and came back, her bare back still to the window, and she had a violin with her and began to play. I stood in the dark near a wide tree and watched as she played her heart into that beautiful brown violin I could just see, tucked under her fragile chin. I stood and listened and went into a knowing there is beauty in this world that saves us.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. I think it needs a little editing, really, in the middle part.
I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
I don't know. That was Rudy Wilson reading from Blue, which was published in The Literarian in...
coming out in the fall.
Coming out this fall, yeah.
So we'll just see. Thank you for letting me.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that was...
Now, let me ask you, as you said you just sort of sat down and wrote that, did you edit at all? Do you edit as you write? Do you do fast first drafts and go back? And is it different for a short piece like this than for, you know, a novel? What's your writing process like?
It's really funny. It's a great question. I've been very interested, by the way, in somebody, a singer named Jenny O. She's California-based. And I just find her to be just fantastic. And I have an interview set up with her. And I can't wait, because I'm really kind of infatuated with her and all that. And I forget what that has to do with this. I really do. No, she...
writing process, editing...
I was remembering years and years ago... from the Paris Review, I was lucky enough to be in, and I won some award from it, which was amazing. The editor, Mona Simpson, who went on to write several novels. I remember her once, we did an interview on the radio or somewhere, me and Mona and Jay McCullough, who was a wonderful editor there also. And they said, Rudy Wilson is the only writer I know that doesn't have to edit. He just sits down, writes it, and sends it out. And it's not really true, you know. I do edit. And sometimes I can get too involved with an over-edit, but I generally know when to stop, you know. It's done. That's it, you know.
That does seem to be... some people either don't edit enough or they over-edit. It seems to be very difficult to find the right...
And I would say always cut that last paragraph off. Mm. I know it's a funny thing. I just thought of it, though. So many things that I've written myself, and I've seen other things, they try to tie it up with a bow or something, or wrap it up. No, just leave it. Cut that last paragraph off. Just let it be, and let the writer... It's almost like you're driving a car, and you hit a wall, and you keep going. God knows where, you know. Not in a negative... I mean, it's so negative, you know. That was in that movie. It was heavy, with Jeff Bridges, whatever. But... cut that last paragraph off and let the reader go with his imagination, their imagination, to where it's going to go. And I think it, I mean, that's why books are so great over movies. I love movies. I mean, I really do, of course. I mean, they're the new world literature in a way, you know, not many people read, but the novel allows our imagination to just soar. And we love, you can so fall in love. I had a book I read recently called The Book Thief. And I slept with that book for so long until I got, this is silly, Poison Ivy. And I started worrying. I got rid of it, of course, long ago. Don't worry. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, what if it's on the book or something? Yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah. So now the book is on the floor by the bed. But I loved that book so much. And the character... it was just so amazing that I slept with the book against my heart. Aww. I mean, and then, you know, later at night I might find it, you know, somewhere weird, you know. Yeah. But I just was in love with The Book Thief, and I recommend it highly by Marcus Zusak.
Wow.
It's the best thing I've read in 20 years.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, Rudy, believe it or not, we're out of time.
No, well, we've. I hope I didn't talk too much. I tend to talk too much.
Absolutely
not.
Not
at all.
Absolutely not.
Thank you. I've loved being here.
I'm really glad that you're able to join us today and help save writers' voices today.
Yes.
And before we close, I want to mention next week we have DJ McHale, who's a number one New York Times bestselling author. He's written for TV, written, directed, and produced numerous award-winning television series and movies for young people, including Are You Afraid of the Dark, Flight 29 Down, and Tower of Terror. He's the author of the Pendragon best-selling book series, and his new series is Silo. It's a sci-fi adventure, really, for young adults. Very gripping and intriguing.
But it's okay if I read it this
way. It is okay, yes.
We are both young adults,
yes,
aren't
course.
We?
Yes, yeah,
on the inside.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, we are.
We
That's
never
true.
Grow up. No one grows up. They just pretend.
That's right.
And, and I want to remind you, we have this our new writing contest, so watch for details in the Weekly Reader, the Fairfield Ledger, the Iowa Source, and we will be talking about it on the air over the next few weeks. And, Mom, do you have some closing words of wisdom for us?
I do. I like this. Life will sometimes hand you a magical moment. Savor it.
And stay tuned now if you're listening on Friday for Planet Earth Wild with James Moore. And if you're listening on Monday morning, have a great Monday. If you're listening online, check out the rest of our podcasts. And if you really loved what Rudy had to say, we've got a couple more podcasts online with Rudy and some articles on writersvoices.com that he wrote. So check those out too. And see you next week on Writers Voices. Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.